Okay, the next argued case is number 16-1145, Savantage Financial Services against the United States. Mr. Lane.
May it please the Court. Counsel for Plaintiff Appellant Savantage Financial Services. I would like to begin by giving some context to this case, which involves financial management software. This is a type of software that's used by all federal agencies to essentially manage the entire cycle of receipts and disbursements. It includes tracking their funded and budgeted dollars to their expenditures and the ability to create financial statements. And Savantage is one of only a handful of providers of this type of software, generally competing against large commercial enterprises. And Savantage has been providing and servicing its software for the Department of Homeland Security since before it was known as DHS. But going back to 2004, DHS and its components have been trying to, in our view, push Savantage out of this small market in favor of the large commercial brands. There have been bid protests, there have been corrective actions, changes in technology, changes in administrations, but through all of this, Savantage's aim has been consistent. Savantage wants to compete with the same software and services that it has been providing to DHS for over the past decade.
Of course.
Even if all of that's true, we have limitations on, and fairly strict limitations, with respect to the scope of the CFC's jurisdiction as well as ours.
Right. And so the issues that we're here today are directly on point with that. The first one being the trial court's jurisdiction. And the jurisdiction issue that we've got is that certain DHS components have interpreted a memorandum written by the Office of Management and Budget, OMB, that they must procure financial systems through a designated shared service provider, a federal shared service provider that I'll refer to as an FSSP. And essentially, the court took the position that our allegations in relation to this were only alleging arbitrary and capricious action and not violations of law. But if you look at the substance of what we've argued, it's that the agency's interpretations of this memorandum are in violation of the law, and we've named three statutes. These were in our complaint, these were in our briefs, and these were in our oral argument. We believe the court misconstrued.
But that's not the jurisdictional question, is it? The jurisdiction question is whether there's any right of appeal at all when the contract, let's say, is kept within the government.
I understand. There's
unless we cross that bridge, the rest of it is irrelevant.
I understand there's two jurisdictional questions I should clarify. One of the defendants raised on appeal, which was the jurisdiction of the court in the first place to consider this issue. And so I'll back up to that point. And we believe, as the trial court did, that this fits squarely within this court's findings and holding in the case Distributed Solutions. As in that case, the vendors here initiated the procurement process, which is statutorily defined, the term procurement, as beginning with the process of determining a need. And here, as in Distributed Solutions, these DHS components reached out to commercial vendors to determine a need. The trial court found that is true. And so the trial court found there was jurisdiction in the first place, consistent with the holding of Distributed Solutions.
But putting that question aside, the problem is that, you know, even if we accept the proposition that the memo misinterpreted certain statutes or regulations, the memo itself, while it ultimately was, you know, sort of getting down the road toward procurement, wasn't in connection with a particular procurement for purposes of that exercise of jurisdiction, was it?
I agree. We're not challenging. The OMB memorandum is a statement of policy. And we're not challenging the OMB memorandum. That we certainly would not intend to do so. What we're challenging is the fact that these three DHS components made procurement decisions based on their interpretations of that memorandum. And in doing so, they essentially interpreted that OMB memorandum as allowing them to circumvent the Competition and Contracting Act, the Economy Act, and the Government Management Reform Act, each of which has substantive requirements that tie the agency when it's making a choice as between using an interagency agreement under the Economy Act, or a choice as between using a federal shared service provider, as in the Government Management Reform Act, or a choice as using a sole source procurement, as in CICA. Each of those laws has has requirements that the agency has to abide by when making that choice.
So where does the jurisdiction kick in? So you're saying it kicks in the minute that an official reads this memorandum and interprets it?
Whenever the agency reaches out to the commercial market to assist in determining a need.
But is a need the same as a procurement for purposes of jurisdictional analysis?
The statute that this court has held as defining the term procurement says that it begins with the process of determining a need.
That a procurement, the language that says that it must be in connection with a procurement?
The statute that says in connection with the procurement is the Tucker Act. So it says a violation of law in connection with the procurement or proposed procurement. And in the Ramcor case, this court interpreted in connection with as a very sweeping in scope phrase. And then in Distributed Solutions, this court interpreted procurement as it's defined in, and I don't have the statute handy with me, but I know it's in our briefs, as beginning with the process of determining a need. And it was a very broad definition of procurement.
Well, let me take you back to the fundamental question. Are you then saying it doesn't matter whether anyone in the commercial market is capable of providing satisfying the need, that once such a contact is made, the government can never decide to withdraw from the commercial market?
I think that would be a problem understanding as opposed to jurisdiction.
Whatever it is, that's a fundamental question, is it not?
It is. But here, Savannage responded to the RFI, and the agency found that the commercial market could meet its needs.
So you're saying the government was prohibited from withdrawing this procurement from the commercial market?
No, I'm saying that the government, in making that choice as to go to the commercial market as opposed to using the process it used here, it had to follow three laws in particular: the Competition and Contracting Act, the Government Management Reform Act, and the Economy Act. And those statutes, to give an example, the Economy Act requires, before using an interagency agreement, that the agency determine that the services and goods cannot be acquired, as in the language in the statute here, at 31 U.S.C. 1535, is by contract as conveniently or cheaply by a commercial enterprise.
So the answer to my question is yes. They're prohibited.
Unless they make that determination, as well as the other determinations under the law. Yes.
How do you deal, though, with the Court of Federal Claims analysis that said that to the extent that you have to fall within the reviewability component of 1491b1, that you have to be concerned with a particular procurement or contract, not just the procurement process?
Well, there was a particular procurement initiated. When the Coast Guard issued an RFI, the language of that RFI was to identify possible available sources able to provide a financial management system software as a service to include all hardware, software, system operation, and maintenance for support for the financial procurement asset acquisition management domains of the U.S. Coast Guard. It goes on to state specific information that it wants from respondents to that RFI. And so by virtue of that process, it did initiate the process of a proposed procurement, and that's what the trial court found and why it found jurisdiction in the first place.
Right, but there's two different steps, right? One is the broad jurisdiction of the Court of Federal Claims, which I know that the government objects to that conclusion, but the Court of Federal Claims didn't find that conclusion to be determinative with respect to its ability to review the particular claims at issue.
Right. The particular claims at issue here, if I understand this very going forward, is whether the agency's interpretations of the OMB memorandum fall within the gambit of that Tucker Act jurisdictional provision.
Yes.
And so where I would say focus there is the fact that we did allege that the Government Management Reform Act, the Economy Act, and the Competition and Contracting Acts, the requirements are circumvented by the agency's reliance on this OMB memorandum to avoid competition, to avoid the commercial market. So that choice is made to avoid the commercial market after starting the process with the commercial market. They've made a choice to avoid the commercial market. In doing so, they never did the determinations that were required under either of those, any of those three laws. And that's where the violation of law in connection with the proposed procurement happens, to tie it back to the Tucker Act.
I thought you had a much better argument in saying that on withdrawing, they didn't really avoid the commercial market because the government agency was provided by Oracle anyway and was in the commercial market. And therefore, the question that I keep asking you, because of the fundamental position, that it doesn't matter how that question is answered. But you're not pressing that argument?
I'm not sure if I understand that angle.
That they weren't really avoiding the commercial market at all when they took this project within the government because the government agency was being commercially served.
Right. That goes to the Competition and Contracting Act violation, where they've effectively got a sole source solution by virtue of, you know, reaching out to the federal shared service provider who is entirely reliant on the Oracle software and Oracle software integrators who provide that service component to it.
But the government position, if I understand it, is that they have every right to do that under the law, and it's hard to see where the boundary is.
Well, I again think the boundary has to be whenever the agency reaches out to the commercial market, you know, not just an RFI to a federal shared service provider, which they did that, they issued requests and engaged in market research with them as well. But whenever they've initiated that contact with the commercial market to determine this need, which is a perfectly reasonable thing to do, of course, to compare the commercial market to what the federal shared service provider is offering. But once they've done that, that's when these statutes kick in to form those requirements. And these statutes are in place to prevent agencies from abusing interagency agreements. Obviously, that's what the Economy Act's purpose is. The Competition and Contracting Act is in place to prevent abuses in regards to competition issues. And the Government Management Reform Act has rules in its statute because it is a very unique arrangement to have these federal shared service providers, you know, in large ways, competing with or providing services and products from the commercial market. And so these statutes have put protections in place to try and serve that. And those are the protections that were avoided, and those are the protections that we tried to assert as violations of law in connection with this main issue.
So I hear you saying that in order to prevail as a matter of law, we must hold that once a solicitation offer is made to the commercial market, it can't be withdrawn.
It can only be withdrawn once they have complied with the statutes that are part of that next phase. So if they want to abandon the process altogether and do nothing, if they reach out to the commercial market and they find that there is no alternative for them and they're done with the procurement, go a different path, then there's nothing that requires them under the Economy Act, certainly, to do anything for an interagency agreement or the GMRA or the Competition and Contracting Act. If they want to engage in an interagency agreement, then they've got to comply with the Economy Act. If the next step is, after they've made that decision to do an interagency agreement, then they necessarily must comply with the Economy Act. If the next step is to use a franchise fund, they must comply with the Government Management Reform Act. If the next step is to engage the commercial market or sole source avenue, then they must comply with the Competition and Contracting Act.
Okay, let's hear from the government on these points, and we'll save you rebuttal time.
Thank you.
Mr. Grimaldi.
Good morning, Your Honors. Your Honors, I'd like to start today with the fundamental question that Your Honor raised about jurisdiction here. The scope of the decision below, the scope of Savantage argument, is that once something goes, once the agency considers commercial alternatives, it cannot turn around. And this is what we find to be the jurisdictional problem in a case below. the court held that there's jurisdiction to choose from one procurement method over the other.
But you're not saying that they're prohibited from questioning what the alternative turns out to be. That is, in this case, we're told, an internal process.
Your Honor, just to clarify your question, if I might, to challenge what was ultimately brought, as the court below found that there is no jurisdiction to actually challenge the interagency agreements because those were not procurement contracts. So in that situation, I would say no, Your Honor.
But what's troublesome here is that apparently the agency then went out or stayed with the commercial market, a different purveyor.
Well, I would like to.
You're not telling us that that is insulated from inquiry.
Let me clarify the facts on there. The government did not use a commercial entity. The government here, DHS, these three DHS components, TSA, DNDL, and the Coast Guard, are utilizing the services of the Department of Interior Business Center. Those are federal employees. DOIBC, in turn, hires commercial partners to help them with their process. But the entity that is providing the services to the DHS components is Department of Interior. And I want to also clarify the concept of Oracle. Oracle is just a piece of software. It's a piece of software that can be modified. In fact, Savantage's product, which has a different name, Ultimate, I believe, is based upon Oracle. You can see that in the first footnote, I believe, of the court's decision. What the modernization of financial management services is the actual doing of the management service, the actual work. Of course, it involves working on software, but this isn't a simple software purchase, Your Honor. I just want to clarify
that. Well, we don't know the answer to that. The question that concerns me is whether that's insulated from inquiry.
Well, yes, Your Honor, and the court's decision below relied upon a overly broad reading of distributed solutions. Now, distributed solutions is a very unique case. This court found jurisdiction in distributed solutions where the agencies issued an RFI, sought information regarding commercial software packages. You received the information from vendors, considered them in scoping their own requirements, created these new requirements, and then handed them off to a prime contractor, instructing that prime contractor to then conduct a subcontract award to obtain the software and then implement it at the agencies. On top of that, the agency officials sat on the selection committee for the subcontract award. So, I mean, really, this court saw that it walked like a duck and it talked like a duck, that it was a procurement. It found there to be jurisdiction. There needs to be a bright line rule here, Your Honors, where what is actually a proposed procurement. In distributed solutions, we have these unique facts where ultimately the subcontract awards were selected by the government, but they were immune from the FAR and other procurement regulations because they were under the guise of a subcontract
award. But the problem is with your theory is that if we were to buy the notion that they could go all the way down the road to the point of demanding that the procurement be an internal procurement rather than an external procurement, there would never be any ability to challenge that. And so I don't understand how you're not initiating a procurement or there isn't action in connection with a procurement when you're analyzing which direction that procurement's going to come from.
Well, I mean, the problem, if we are saying that the Tucker Act jurisdiction kicks in at the point when the government is analyzing which alternative to do, every nascent thought about how to acquire something could be subject to Tucker Act jurisdiction. If two contracting officers are walking down the hallway and one stops and talks to the other saying, hey, should we solicit this externally to commercial contractors or should we just do this internally? And the answer is no, let's just do it internally. That is that conversation that is subject to Tucker Act jurisdiction. There has to be a bright line rule.
That's not the situation.
No,
it is
not. We have
a specific situation where there was a procurement, there were bidders, they were told after going through the process, you're all out of...
That's distributed solutions, Your Honor. In this present case, first off, only one of the three components here today issued an RFI. So if Savantage makes the argument now that at the point of...
Does it make a difference whether it's one or two?
Well, certainly for jurisdictional purposes, because if the point of issuing the RFI created a procurement, then lower court should have dismissed against the charges against DNDO and TSA, because they did not issue RFIs.
Well, but, there's two different, I mean, the court engaged in two different analyses. I mean, in distributed solutions, we said determining a need was sufficiently part of the procurement process to give rise to jurisdiction.
Right.
That doesn't necessarily mean that you can establish that there was an abuse of discretion or that there was ultimately a procurement for purposes of the Tucker Act claims.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And Your Honors have read our briefs and how we argue that there could be no procurement error here anyway, even if there is jurisdiction. So I absolutely agree with you, Your Honor. The distinction here is, and this is something that the Court of Federal Claims has pointed out in the VFA case in International Genomics, that if there's a possibility of a Pandora's box being opened up of jurisdiction in these such cases. For instance, in VFA case, the government owned its own software and it attempted to use that software.
But isn't there specifically, there was a specific finding that there the DOD never even contemplated or initiated a procurement process?
Right, Your Honor. And our case is somewhere in between distributed solutions and VFA. And we acknowledge that. We think the line for when a procurement should start and when jurisdiction should kick in is a situation like distributed solutions, which the Court of Federal Claims has subsequently found to be unique facts. And they certainly are unique facts, where there was the use of the RFI information to craft requirements. Here we don't have that. There's nothing in the record that indicates that the RFI was used to craft requirements. It was checking to comply with the OMB circulars whether or not the commercial market could actually supply the stuff as well as the federal shared service providers. So there's a distinction right there, Your Honors. So there is this a breadth of cases in which the government is considering what its options are in terms of purchasing something, and a line needs to be formed.
But you don't see a big difference between VFA, where what it was, can I use something I already own and not consider the possibility of going outside, versus I've always gone outside. Can I now decide not to go outside?
2 points to that. Right now, the Coast Guard, TSA, and DNDA are receiving services from the Coast Guard. So they're not receiving them from outside. Savantage's customers are not currently before this court. They are the components that were dismissed as unripe, and Savantage has not appealed that decision. So there are familiar aspects with VFA. Also, DOI IBC's employees do exist. They are there. They are capable of doing this work. They're similar to the existing software in VFA in that sense. So there are ties between our case and VFA. There are ties between our case, admittedly, and distributed solutions. But it is somewhere in between. And there needs to be a bright line rule demonstrating where there is a procurement that is under the jurisdiction of the Tucker Act and where there is not. And we believe that line to be distributed solutions, as explained in our briefing. Going along with that, interested party standing, it suffers from, we believe, the same situation where this court has defined interested party to mean to be equivalent in the GAO context under the CICA definition as well as the Tucker Act. In this court's in the Court of Federal Claims decision, the court simply checked whether or not Savantage would be an interested party and a prospective offerer on any commercial offering, but did not actually take a look at the CICA definition that is required to find whether there's an interested party. And the language that we point out that they ignored in our briefing is with respect to a contract or a solicitation or request for other offers described in paragraph 1. And we believe that the lower court did not address this, finding that there was standing for Savantage to pursue its claims. In the event that the court disagrees with our jurisdictional arguments, we do support the lower court's jurisdictional finding that there is limited jurisdiction here regarding the OMB Memorandum 13-8. Now, we do believe, Your Honors, that this is an attempt to get a second bite of the apple on the part of Savantage, that this is not the claim that they pursued below. Below, they sought to argue that the interpretation of the memorandum by the DHS components was arbitrary and capricious within itself, that when we moved to dismiss it, saying that there's no jurisdiction for these pure arbitrary and capricious elements, the reply from Savantage was to say that there was jurisdiction here, not that we were misunderstanding their argument that they were actually alleging violations of CICA, the Economy Act, or the GMRA, but rather that there is jurisdiction of the Court of Federal Claims for arbitrary and capricious conduct unrelated to a statute or regulation. Even before this court, in its reply brief on pages 18 or 19, Savannah still makes this argument, saying that there is jurisdiction below for arbitrary and capricious behavior. Just to note, Your Honors, even if the Spanish does not waive this, it is nothing more than a collateral attack on the actual decision of the agencies. Now, to be very clear, the court did review the finding of procurement error, in fact. The component's decision to go to a federal shared service provider without doing a CICA justification. And then it also dismissed the claims regarding the Economy Act and the GMRI because they did not pertain to a procurement contract. An argument that the agencies here, the three components here, violated CICA and these other acts based upon an interpretation of memo is just another way of arguing the same thing. The allegations were that they violated CICA by going in-house to another part of the government. Whether that was done at that point or by interpreting, the interpretation of a memo leading to that isn't the actual final agency action by the government. It's its move to the federal shared service provider. Why they did it, when they were interpreting a memorandum that Savannah still has not argued has a force and effect of law, is irrelevant. If Your Honors have no further questions, I'll just touch briefly on harmful error and just note that Savannah's argument would require the lower court to find harmful error even when the record says the opposite, which is exactly what Shinseki v. Sanders of the Supreme Court says is not appropriate for a prejudice determination. We believe that the factual predicate exists in the record to use the Badham and Emery test for prejudice and that the lower court's decision was correct. If the court has no further questions, we respectfully request the court dismiss the appeal or in the alternative affirm.
Any questions? Thank you, Mr. Grimaldi. Mr. Lane.
Thank you. The government's position here is that they've created such a unique procurement that it's unchallengeable in court. But it's not that unique. It is just like what happened in Distributed Solutions. There was an RFI. Our client, Savannah, did respond to that RFI, and the Coast Guard determined that the commercial market could meet its alternatives, but that in accordance with the OMB memorandum, the way it was interpreting the OMB memorandum, it was going to proceed with a federal shared service provider instead. And this concept that the other two agencies didn't do the same degree, these three agencies were working in tandem, and as the defendant notes, TSA and DNDO are ultimately getting it through Coast Guard. TSA and DNDO also engaged the commercial market. They just did so on a private basis. They didn't do it with a public RFI. They just engaged commercial vendors to submit rough pricing and requirements in detail in that respect. The next point I want to make is that the RFIs were not just, as Mr. Grimaldi stated, used as some sort of preliminary process and not used to help determine the requirements. The record is littered with these determinations that the agencies did, alternatives analyses and business cases, wherein they relied expressly on that data from the commercial market to help shape where they were going with this procurement. The next point I'd like to make on the issue of the interested party, where they say that the AFGE decision somehow precludes the standing in this case, whenever the court in AFGE went back to the Competition and Contracting Act's jurisdictional definitions of interested party, that definition was from 1984, and that definition prescribes the jurisdiction as to the Comptroller General over bid protests. In 1996, that's when the Administrative Dispute Resolution Act came across and expanded the Court of Federal Claims jurisdiction to include proposed procurements. And what Distributed Solutions did was it read AFGE in a manner that's consistent with the ADRA. So we feel like that standing has to be assessed in the context of the proposed procurement, not necessarily limited to the actions that constrained GAO's bid protest jurisdiction. When the ADRA came along, it expressly made these different whenever it added proposed procurements.
What's your response to the government's point that this really isn't distributed solutions? Even if you're right in the reading of distributed solutions, factually, you don't fall within the bounds of distributed solutions.
Well, in distributed solutions, the facts that were critical were that they had an RFI and they used that RFI to shape their needs. And here there was an RFI and they used that RFI to shape their needs. And that's reflected in the alternatives analyses. That's reflected in the business cases that these agencies did. That's reflected in multiple presentations where they brought up and compared the technical capabilities and the cost that the commercial market was offering as compared to what the FSSP was offering, which was really just ultimately one commercial vendor that they were engaged with at that point and calling it an FSSP market. And so I think Judge Newman's point, that at the point when they were making this decision, there was one FSSP that was on the table that they were comparing to the commercial market. That one FSSP provided Oracle software. They knew that. There was an integrator that they were already working with that services that Oracle software. And that's the integrator that they chose and moved along with.
Well, let me ask you another question, because there is a certain weight to the argument that whatever the government does is subject to review and exposure. But what I still don't understand is that even if we agree with all of these threshold questions in your favor, what could conceivably happen to change the result?
Well, what would happen to change the result is that the agencies would have to do a real comparison. So here, they engaged with RFIs, and what that process meant, we've used that term a lot, what it meant is they went out to industry and said that we're looking to do this. We want to procure this type of system in this type of way. Here's a list of some 30 requirements that we need to have met. And then propose to us what type of stuff that you have on what's called a rough order of magnitude, a ROM basis. And so the seven qualified contractors submitted ROM proposals with rough pricing based on essentially their suggested way of doing this. And so when the agency made these comparisons, the agency wasn't comparing apples and apples. The agency was comparing what the FSSP was offering through Oracle to what seven other vendors came up with as possible solutions, and then selected, based on the OMB memorandum, the FSSP, without ever giving them a common set of requirements to look at. And so what we want would be just a common set of requirements that Savantage, the commercial market, could bid to make these comparisons that are required by the statute. They're required by three statutes. And those requirements got pushed by the wayside whenever, and getting to the prejudice issue, whenever the trial court said, yes, there's not a secret justification, but I'll just make one for the agency. And she ignored all of the arguments we had in relation to the rationality of the inputs for that CECA justification. So that justification requires a statutory authority. She just found that they had referred to the Economy Act, and she didn't assess whether the Economy Act was met. The nature of unique qualifications is another one of those elements under there. She didn't assess whether any of that was met in a substantive point, even though our briefs had attacked all of those different issues.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Lane. Mr. Grimaldi, do you want a minute to respond to the question that I asked Mr. Lane?
I would appreciate that. Thank you very much, Your Honors. The answer that to your question that you received from Savantage, what could be done to rectify this, was a common set of requirements to which they could bid. So the answer to your question was, give us a competition. That's the only thing that Savantage believes is required by the law, the only thing the government can do here.
What's wrong with that?
Well, then we would have a requirement for competition for everything, Your Honor. That it's a mandatory competition.
Not for everything, only in a situation where there has been a solicitation, which was then withdrawn, which I assume happens very seldom.
A solicitation which had been withdrawn is a completely different case than we have right here. We have an RFI, Your Honor. That's a request for information. It's not a bid. There's no bid submitted to that through which the government could accept creating a contract. It's only a request for information seeking a survey. It's market research.
Is this the line that you believe should be drawn?
No, we believe the line to be distributed solutions. It's a step beyond simple market research such as an RFI. But if that is the line that Savantage advocates and that's the line this court draws, again, DNDO, TSA, neither of them issued an RFI. Only the Coast Guard did. But again, the Coast Guard was only seeking information about the commercial vendors. It was not seeking offers or bids that we could accept to create a contract. It did not cancel the RFI. It simply reviewed the information and determined that it would go towards a federal shared service provider.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Thank you both. The case is taken under submission.
All rise.